Today is October 7th, 2008. My name is Michael Rodriguez for the Michigan Writers Series for the MSU Libraries, and I'm here with Michael Kimball, a guest of the series. Welcome.
Thank you.
You know, I always start with, because it's called the Michigan Writers Series, we talk about Michigan.
Sure.
So you said something interesting. This is your first time. You grew up here. You left in what year? What year did you leave?
I grew up here. I went to high school here. Yeah. I went to college at Michigan State. Yeah. I left in '90 for Chicago. I felt at the time that I needed to go to the big city, which, if you live in the Midwest, is Chicago. Mm-hmm. So I lived in Chicago for a couple of years. Realized at a certain point that it was still the Midwest, and I also needed to leave the Midwest. Mm-hmm. So I went to New York. Was in New York for most of the '90s, and that's where I feel to a strong extent that I eventually became the writer that I am. Was being in New York. But in between, you know, from '90 to now, I've come back to Michigan. I have family here, but I've never come back. Even though I've published three novels, this is the first time I've come back as a writer to read my work.
What's the difference, coming back as a writer and coming back as...
Well, coming back as a Michigan as a son or a brother or a friend or that. So you know, it's a different kind of thing. It's a different relation, in a sense, to the people you're seeing. All of those people knew me as a person. I mean, they still know me as a person, but they knew me that way before I was ever a writer in any way. And I think one of the big differences when you're a writer, when you start publishing work, you become a public figure, even if it's in a minor way. And your work is out there. Anybody can read it. Anybody can have an opinion about what you're doing. And so that changes things a little bit. And it's also, for me, this was tied. I have a sort of long, tortured publication history. My first two books did well in the UK and Europe. My first book didn't do all that well here, did okay. My second book wasn't actually published here. It was only published overseas. It's going to come out in the US next year. And so there was something...
The second book, let's give it a name. The second book is the... So the first of the...
How much of us there was.
Right.
So the first book was The Way the Family Got Away.
Right.
And, you know, it did well enough. But the How Much of Us There Was never came out here. It'll come out in the U.S. next year, actually. So my second book will come out after my third book in the U.S. And one of the nice things about coming back to Michigan now is that... it was nice to have Dear Everybody come out in the UK, US, and Canada, you know, basically all in 2008. And then the one thing I wished for Dear Everybody, your expectations change as you go through the publishing. and the one thing I wished for Dear Everybody is that it would get one good print review. I didn't care where, you know, just one good print review. And I actually got that. Time Out New York gave it a rave of sorts. And that was even a couple days before the official pub date. And so, honestly, I just felt a release. Yeah. There was a kind of validation to that. And so there's something of that to coming back to Michigan as a writer. And that's sort of what
as
I was getting at.
As a successful writer.
So...
that's a thing to say. The question usually has to do with, you know, the Michigan question usually has to do with the writer's connection to the state or the Midwest in general. And you wanted to shake off the Midwest. And so, you know, I got to ask about that.
Sure.
Why did you want to? Some people embrace it.
Yeah.
You know, some people want to embrace something else.
I think. There was some my experience here. I mean, growing up in Michigan, you know, Michigan was unavoidably formative for me. There are a lot of things I learned growing up in Michigan that are still with me. There's a certain work ethic that I would say is a prevailing work ethic for Michigan. Things like that. you know, working hard, being persistent, all of that sort of stuff. Also, one of the things I got a taste of in Diane Wachowski's classes was a certain standard, a certain high standard. Mm-hmm. She would hold writers to a very high standard. Even undergraduates, you know, mm-hmm. she just had big expectations for what you were doing. And so it was really her that sort of opened my world up in that way, and I started to look around and see all of these great writers in other places. And I still remember, it would have been my senior year in college, I had a good friend here, Matthew Diener, who was a poet, and we would talk about what we were going to do. We were going to be writers, and we had decided that if we were going to be writers, there were two places in the U.S. you could go. You could go to New York City, or you could go to Los Angeles. Because of other circumstances, Chicago ended up being a little intermediary step to that, but I knew I eventually had to get somewhere else. And so, you know, being in New York, I was still a Midwestern person in New York. There are, you know, people who lived in New York a long time or grew up in New York. They know you're not from New York.
Yeah.
I had a Midwestern accent. There's a nasally thing we do here that's immediately recognizable to people from the East Coast. Whether we want to believe that or not, it's true. If you're away long enough, it can go away. When I come home and start talking with my family, it comes back. I was working in publishing for the longest time, and I had friends who always would say, "Oh, I can't find my calendar. Could you give me my calendar? You know, can you show me your calendar?" Because the way I would say calendar, and so there was this nasally thing I would do to my A's, and they just thought that was hysterical.
Yeah,
so
that was funny.
But the great thing, so you know, the great thing about New York was the standards are very high there. From what I saw, they were as high as they were anywhere. I mean, that was, if you know, it's the old cliche, if you can make it there. I'm not going to say the rest of it, but and so you know, there was a lot I took from Michigan. But I also knew that I just had this feeling that to really develop as a writer, I needed to go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And it was even, I had applied to grad schools. Michigan State was one I got into, and I had a really hard time deciding what I was going to do. Mm-hmm. And Diane was actually one of the people who said, "You should leave."
Mm-hmm. So you went to grad school in New York?
So I was in grad school at NYU, and that's how I got myself to New York to begin with.
Yeah.
Then I dropped out, found a job in publishing, was writing while I was working as an editor. So
have you washed the Midwest out of? You're in Baltimore now, right?
Yeah, Baltimore.
So is that I mean, Baltimore's certainly a much different place than New York City.
Yes.
Well, I'll just let you talk about that. Is what is the literary scene in Baltimore? Is that more like being in a place like
it's
Detroit or Chicago?
It's closer to Detroit or Chicago than New York City. Mm. One of the strange things, when I first started going to readings in Baltimore, they were all poetry readings or sort of performance art things. It was all that. And I started asking people, sort of, where's the fiction reading? Mm. You know, where's the fiction reading series? There could be half a dozen poetry reading series that take place, you know, the same time of the week or month or whatever it is. And eventually learned there was no fiction reading series in Baltimore. There was the isolated writer who had come to Hopkins or Loyola or University of Baltimore, whatever it was, but no fiction reading series. And so actually earlier in 2008, I started a fiction reading series. It's a once a month thing. I had no idea whether it would fly, whether, you know, maybe there wasn't a fiction reading series because nobody wanted to go. It's in an art gallery in one of the neighborhoods in the middle of the city. So it's an easy place for people to get to. We actually get a lot of people out for this thing. I think the one we had in September, we had 70 people out. Every chair was filled. There were people staying. It's not a big art gallery. It's a small art gallery. So people sitting on the floor, you know, standing on the steps, all of that.
That's because they're starved for fiction.
They were starved for fiction. They just didn't know it. They were they couldn't wait to hear fiction, but nobody was giving it to them. So it's actually been really nice. The local public radio station, we do it once a month. They usually take one of our readers, have them on the
Are the readers all local?
Most of the readers are local. We also bring in a fair amount of DC people, and we do, if we can, sync up with somebody's book tour or something like that. We've had people from New York, Minneapolis, Pittsburgh, West Virginia. So anybody who's willing to come, we're willing to, you know, we're happy to have. But we try and focus on Baltimore. That's what gets the crowd out. That's all of the people. But also the local media, the newspapers, they've been really great about plugging it and saying, look, there are these people doing this thing. It's great. Go out and see it. And so it's such a supportive community, which is one of the things I really liked about it. It's different from the competitiveness that you get in New York. So
interesting. Enough about geography. Okay. we actually don't have that much time, so I have to ask about something that I saw on either your website or your blog, I'm not sure where, but the idea of the cardboard sign, and it looks like you're busking Michael Kimball with a sign that says, Michael Kimball, write your life story on a postcard. This is some sort of project.
Yes.
Now, writers this is the first I've ever heard of writers being actually busking.
Sure.
Is that what you're doing? You got to talk.
Sometimes that's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
It started at a performance art festival in Baltimore. It was a 4 or 5 day event. I was there for the opening night. One of my friends was curating the next night. He said, "Why aren't you doing something?" I said, "I'm not a performance artist. I'm a writer. What would a writer do?" We started joking about what a writer might do. Somehow I said, I could write people's life stories. The idea of the postcard got tied to that. It's just a funny joke. Went home that night, didn't really think about it again. My friend Adam called me the next morning. He said, "You have to do this. I've got a table set up for you. I have, you know, the sign ready, you know, got the space for the sign. We're all ready to go. You know, you have to do this." So I thought, it'll be funny. It'll be fun. I'll write a couple of these things. I'll see what else is going on. It's this big multi-level venue where this thing was. Got there early before the crowd started, found my table, you know, all that stuff. There's an artist with a studio set up right behind me. He said, "Oh, I want to do this before everybody gets here." I said, "Okay, sure." I hadn't even really thought about how it would work. I didn't think about what questions I would ask people, anything. But I just started talking to him, asking him questions, you know, all that stuff. Took notes, started writing his life story on the postcard, gave him the postcard. Looked up and a line had formed. And so there was already a group of people waiting to be interviewed about their life story. I ended up doing it over 4 hours that night. Dozens of people, you know, all of that. And even at that point, I thought, it was just a fun thing. One off, I'm done. A month or two later, I had some friends invite me to do it at it's called Hunfest. Big festival in Hamden in Baltimore with all the beehive hairdos, 50s retro stuff, big thing. Ended up doing it there. And then the blog started. I started taking requests over email. People could send me their phone number, or I would just had a list of starter questions. People would answer them, send them to me. I'd ask them follow-ups, all that. And so it's turned into this really big, unexpectedly, you know, project. I've written, I think I'm around 110 now, and it's honestly been fascinating. If you talk to anybody long enough, or at least for a certain amount of time.
How long would you talk to them?
It depends. I mean, it could be 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Some people
That's
are,
a long time.
Some people are seriously forthcoming, yeah. and will just, you could say, so, Michael, tell me about yourself. Yeah. And you could just start off with the most important things about, other people sort of need to work up to it.
Mm-hmm.
Or other people, it's a very self-selecting group. I get a fair amount of people who have had fairly difficult lives for one reason or another, trauma of different sorts, dysfunctional families, that sort of thing. And sometimes it can take them a while to work into their story. So I've actually had 2-hour conversations with people.
Wow.
Just,
and you, is this one postcard?
And so then I distill it down to one postcard. I had somebody send me, it was about 5,000 words. It was an email interview. Collectively, it was 5,000 words. I think I got it down to 350, something like that.
So it's more
than
one postcard.
I can write almost 500 words on a postcard.
Wow.
I've learned to write small, and I have a special pen for it.
And so the next question is, the postcards, what's on the other side of the postcards?
It can be anything, but I had a ton of promotional postcards for Dear Everybody, more than I ever thought would be given away or put in bookstores or that sort of thing. So I have this surplus of those, and I use those a fair amount.
That's a special thing. That's very cool. So, you know, if it doesn't work out, you can sit on street corners and... You can always make a living.
When I've done it at festivals, when I did it at Hunfest, people were very suspicious, and they would say, well, how much is it?
Yeah.
And I would say, no, it's free. And then even the idea that it was free
was
suspicious to them.
Okay. Right.
And so, I mean, you know, I don't... Writing isn't about money or commodity to me. Writing is something I love to do, and that's why I do it, and... I was talking about this in one of the creative writing classes today, that even if nobody published Dear Everybody, that would have been okay. Mm-hmm. I had a great time writing the book, and it seriously would have been fine. I don't think I could have said that about my first two books, but I reached a point where I could say that about my third book. And so it's a nice place to get to. But I've also had, there is an industry around life story things. I've had a couple people who are professional, not storytellers, professional biographers. They do written biographies, they do video biographies, they do audio biographies, where they sit down with people and interview them. And then put this all together in whatever form the person wants it put together, and so there have been a few people who have quizzed me about that, who do it. That's not what I'm doing. Yeah. It's not what I'm. But they were sort of fascinated that this thing they do and get paid it must be a decent amount of money to do, especially if it's video and all of the work involved in editing and all the hours that takes. So, you know, they have a project that could last months, and I was doing it in an hour or a half hour or 3 hours, depending on how long the conversation was. So,
wow. I think it's fascinating stuff. I wanted to talk about the books, but we're actually out of time, so I'll just have to let you read, which is the reading that's about to happen. And the last book is...
Dear Everybody.
Dear Everybody. Interesting stuff. The notes to lots of people. So the book before this is about the aged.
Yes.
And this book is about suicide.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they all the books cover very different ground.
Yeah.
How Much of Us There Was is mostly narrated by an older man, and it's about his loving... long marriage.
I read the
in large part.
That's
the opening to the book, and you can get that online. And this book, when people ask me what it's about, I say it's about a man writing letters to nearly everybody he knew, and through doing so he tells his life story. And so at its heart, that's what it is. There are a lot of other people who fill in the gaps. There are diary entries from his mother, his brother's trying to pull information together to make it make sense. There's a eulogy from his ex-wife. There are other documents like psychological evaluations, yearbook quotes.
Oh, so there are other documents. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're really I would say over 20 different narrators. Mm-hmm. Some of them just have a piece. Mm-hmm. Some of them show up repeatedly. But there are a lot of different voices. He's the major character is Jonathan Bender, and he's right. The one writing the letters.
From
Lansing, went to Waverly High School, right. Where I went to Michigan State, where I went. But Jonathan is not me, for whatever that's worth. I call those incidental biographical details.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, thanks a lot. Anything else?
Yeah. Thanks for having me.